What is up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Combo's Court. Don't forget to rate, review, punch down on that subscribe button wherever you tune in to the show. And shouts to our sponsor, Prize Picks. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy. For a first deposit match up to $100, use code COMBO. That's right. Use code COMBO for a first deposit match up to $100. I'll leave a link in the show notes for that. Using code COMBO on Prize Picks is also a great way to support the show. Today's episode, Keandre of Hoop Intellect returns to Combo's Court to talk 2024 NBA Draft. Is Bronny James an NBA player? The rookie of the year race between Chet and Wemby, plus more. Just a fantastic conversation with Keandre. Let's get into it. Keandre, Hoop Intellect. We've done a lot of podcasts, Keandre. I don't know if everybody knows that. We've done a lot of podcasts.
Yeah, we have. How many is this? I lost count at this point.
A lot. But I would say a while back, this might have been 2-3 years ago, we talked about Bronny James. Me and you believed he was an NBA player. This was a while back. He might have been maybe 16 years old at the time. You know, we talked about the defense. We talked about, you know, the shooting looked good. I thought he would get a little bit taller, Keandre. I'm not going to lie. I thought he'd be a little bit taller than this at this point. But, you know, you've been analyzing draft prospects for a long time. So just watching him play as a 19-year-old, is Bronny James an NBA player?
I think so. I still think so. And despite the kind of all the narratives and the noise around him and the eyes that are placed on him in a way that just doesn't happen for anybody else, really, in the way that he's come into college, I still think that he's an NBA player for a number of reasons. Like we mentioned before, just the defense, the athleticism. And I think when we talk about him, we got to mention the setback last summer, obviously having, you know, a life-threatening heart issue and then having to work back from that. I think if it was anybody else, we'd be like, oh, this is a heartwarming story for a guy to come back and get back so quickly and return to the court, right? But because it's LeBron's son, we have these big giant expectations, is because people haven't necessarily watched him as much or as closely, especially in full games. They don't necessarily have a sense of what he does and what he brings to the table. But I still think as we get, you know, over the next year, this is what I would do. I would tell him to, you know, take another year at USC, or even if it is somewhere else, you know, work on the things that you need to work on and produce at a level that is of an NBA type of talent that I think that he still is. So I'm still pretty confident that he's going to get there. It's just not maybe on the time that we thought it would.
Yeah, it feels like he has the tools, but what do you think are the biggest improvement areas for him? And I think it's a little bit hard to tell, like not a lot of reps, you know, minutes restriction. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is for him, because we know what type of role that he's going to play in the NBA. He's not going to just overnight become Steph Curry or Kyrie off the bounce. Like, that's not what he does.
Right.
I think the biggest things for him is just, one, getting some of that confidence back. We saw that year, you know, that he took before his senior year in the EYBL, just kind of getting more confident in not only just like some of the creation stuff, but just taking what's in front of him, you know, getting to the basket a little bit more. That kind of stuff we need to see just a little bit more frequently. And then obviously it's just knocking down shots, right? And I think a lot of scouts would have different opinions on that, because we have seen him be such a good shooter over time that where it's at right now, you kind of live with. Like, I think you can projectably like think that he's going to shoot it better in the future, but you also want to see it happen at the college level before you kind of make those big distinctions and put, you know, all those resources into him in a draft pick, especially in the first round. So those types of things. And then, yeah, just kind of playing with physicality, adjusting to that speed, all that kind of stuff that comes on, along with making that jump to a higher level. So those are some of the things I think that he needs to get better at. But it's really, and especially this is, I didn't mention this before, but like the USC situation this year, just kind of all over the place, injuries here and there. You've got Collier's kind of work back and then, yeah, you know, different guys in and out of the lineup, and they haven't really had the the type of success that you would have liked to see from a group like this that is as talented as they are. So it's been just a lot of different factors for them.
Were you surprised by the reaction of him going on that mock draft from 24 to 25? Or do you just think, like, he's Bronny James, LeBron's son, this is the type of reaction it's going to be?
I'm not surprised. You know, anytime something Bronny related comes up, it's always going to come with scrutiny. He could score 25 points in a game and you'll still have people talking about, you know, what he didn't do in the game, or, oh, none of these shots were off the dribble, or whatever the case is, you know?
Right, right.
So I'm not necessarily surprised by that. You know, that's just kind of, that comes with the territory for LeBron, and not, he's not necessarily, like, he deserves a little bit of the blame for that. He kind of creates this world around him in some ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of it is just comes with being one of the best players of all time. It's just kind of what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you can't control the internet's reaction. Like, just let the kid be a kid. Like, I get it. Like, I understand why you want that for your son, but you're not going to control what the internet does. You just can't.
Yeah, that's just the nature of it. And, you know, that's my thing too, is like, if he was the 39th pick or whatever they had him at next year, I think that would be a success, you know? Mm. Like, based off of what he is, what he can do and who he can be, like, putting him there right now feels like a pretty fair, you know, thing to do. But the problem is a lot of people have this expectation that for certain players, getting to that point, like, you're a failure. Or if you're a second round pick, or you go undrafted, like, you're a failure, or you play in the G League, like, you're a failure. Anything below being in an NBA rotation for a lot of casual NBA fans is you're bad at basketball.
I think it's worse than that. I think if you're not a superstar, you're bad at basketball for them.
For some people, right. And for Bronny, it is kind of that, because even like going back,
I'm not saying for Bronny, I'm just saying like more casual fans would be like, not LeBron James, and there's everybody else isn't good. Like, that's how it is for people.
Yeah, that's true too. But even like the machine that was around Lonzo Ball,
right?
When
right.
he didn't turn out to be Steph Curry, because LeVar was saying that, there was a reaction. Even though if you had watched Lonzo for any point in time, you knew that he was not Steph. Right. Like, that was right. obvious, or what he brought right. to the table. Mm-hmm. So people's ideas get skewed, and it kind of turns into what it is. But for me personally, I just kind of ignore that and just watch it for what it is.
I don't think he ends up as a second round prospect, though. I mean, part of it, I think he will improve, and part of it, you know, he is LeBron's son. I think he'll end up being in the first round.
Yeah, that's another factor, because if LeBron is serious about, you know, potentially joining forces with him, that's going to put pressure on, whether it be is the Lakers or, you know, other teams out there to potentially, you know, create something there.
Right. Let's shift to your board. You had Alex Saar number one. Is he starting to feel more like a consensus in a draft where everybody's saying the race to number one is wide open?
Yeah, I feel like this class is just going to not have a consensus number one. There's just going to continue to be this group of prospects. I feel like maybe he's the most popular number one pick at this point in time. But depending on the team that gets the first pick or the first couple picks, you could see a lot of different guys kind of shift up and move up different mocks and how we see things shaping out. Because you take a team like Detroit, Alex Saar isn't necessarily the easiest fit with that group, especially 100%. With the guys that you have invested in, right? If he was a better shooter, I feel like it would be far and away, you know, you just plug him in there and if they'll figure it out. But you do have Jalen Duren, who I still find to be intriguing in a lot of ways. You do have a lineup that has struggled with spacing, so you don't want to necessarily add to that, especially at the number one pick. When you have guys like Asar and, you know, Jalen Duren, you've been playing different players at the four. So that could be there's could be some difficulties there. But based off of what Alex Saar brings to the table, I think that he, you know, as a defensive player who can cover ground like he has, we've talked about this in the past. I think that he's the best option for the top pick right now.
Yeah. Do you feel like him being of the Chet Wemby archetype and not being as highly touted of a prospect, which he shouldn't be. He's not Chet, and he's definitely not Wemby. Yeah. Do you think that hurts him or helps him? Like, being of that archetype, but then being not as good, you know? Because, like, maybe some people have in mind, like, this is what the number one pick should look like, but then they're also thinking, like, he's this archetype. You know, the other side might say he's this archetype, but just not as good.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to it's only going to hurt him in like the in the eyes of like public or people who haven't really necessarily watched, because you hear, you know, athletic big man who can move, defend a lot of different positions and spots on the floor, and also has like this great upside on the offensive end to be able to put on the floor and drive, or, you know, space the floor, shoot the three. But I think like because we have seen, and I'll go even back to Evan Mobley, because I feel like that's somebody who is probably the closest to, if we're talking about like young bigs.
Let me ask you this, just in terms of prospect. Now, not looking at what he's been in the league, yeah, but just in terms of prospect, would you have him better than James Wiseman?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I wasn't a big fan.
People were high on him, DeAndre. People were really high.
There was a lot of big Wiseman fans. I wasn't a huge fan of his.
Okay.
Because, you know, there was a lot of reasons. We don't have to get into like all the details, but I would definitely put Sar over him. I think that Sar would be a notch below or Mobley, just like right there to Mobley, like, in similarities, there's a lot of similarities between them just as players in general. We just want to talk like some of the questions in being able to space the floor or play the five full time, or, you know, given their physicalities and body types. Those are kind of the similarities I see between those two.
Cody Williams, such an interesting prospect in my opinion, because, you know, not known as a shooter, but shoots a really high percentage, a really nice percentage, more of a slasher. But then when he gets to the rim, you know, pushed off balance, it's like he's good at making difficult finishes, but it's not like in the Kyrie sense where it's effortless. It's more like in the YMCA finishes, like, how did he make that kind of thing? Yeah. What do you make of him as an offensive player at the next level?
Yeah, he's somebody that I'm really curious to watch over the next couple of years because of some of those things as you mentioned. I think physically that's the biggest thing for him, like he's gonna have to really put some time in there to become who we think he can, because some of those things you mentioned, like the finishing angles where he gets to the bucket and he does convert at a high rate, like,
yeah, he does.
At a certain point you got to just go with the results, because some people can figure things out in a different way, but obviously heading to the NBA level where there is more length and athleticism at the rim, and guys who are a little bit stronger, when you are trying to drive, that's going to be something that you'll have to at least watch when he tries to find solutions to that. So that's one thing. And then just kind of my bigger concerns with him, I guess, would be just in his like overall versatility as a scorer, because, you know, I think he's proven to me that he can catch and shoot threes. I feel like I'm pretty confident in saying that he'll be able to do that. Maybe not on like high volume, but I think he'll be able to do that at least decently. But it's kind of the in-between games, some of the, you know, getting to a pull-up. Like, he has never been that guy, even dating back to the UIBL, that kind of stuff. So he's kind of an interesting player where he's going to likely fill into this kind of connector role on the wing where, you know, he can dribble, pass, you know, shoot a little bit, and just kind of try to fit in between hopefully some other dynamic guards and players and kind of go from there. I feel like the pitch with him, especially in this class, is just kind of you take a guy with good feel. He's got the tools. Yeah. You know, he can shoot it. He's producing at a high level on his team right now, and you just kind of go from there. And especially with his brother being J-Dub and the kind of progression we saw from him, you know,
and the way the body filled out, that helps
right.
too.
And from just being a freshman at Santa Clara to being a all-star level player right now within like 3 years, you know, that's the kind of pitch with him. I feel like that's getting him into, I wouldn't put him necessarily in number one pick convos, but definitely top five.
Essentially, I think the shooting does get better, and you hear from everybody like he's a hard worker. I think it gets better. But when you look at like the star players in the NBA, and you used to, I feel like, you know, in the 90s, you used to be able to be just a slasher and be like an all-star. But like it's like you almost have to be a three-level scorer at this point to be an NBA all-star, star, or superstar.
Yeah, you got to at least show something. That's the thing. Yeah. Because even guys who were like ineffective percentage-wise, like I would say like Tyrese Maxey, this is just from a guard perspective, but Tyrese Maxey always got to the floater whenever he wanted in college. You know, you could see the pull up. He didn't shoot a good percentage from three, but I was like, I know he's going to shoot in the future. You could just see it. You look at the free throw percentages too. But like, you can see different pieces for different players. And I'm trying to think of a wing example, but like with Cody, you kind of just want to see just a little bit more of that stuff to be like confident in him reaching those highest ends. Like even Brandon Ingram, we go back to Duke, like you can still see all those pieces, even though it took a while for him to get it together in the NBA. But yeah, that's kind of my hesitation, and that's kind of the weirdness of this class as a whole, because you do have a lot of those guys like Cody Williams, Matis Buzelis, even like Zach Risacher. In some ways, he has improved upon that stuff over the course of the season, but that's kind of the why this class is so interesting in a lot of different ways.
Are people sleeping on Buzelis's like ceiling? I feel like he could be one of those guys that, like, if he fills out and just plays the way he does, his ceiling could be higher than like a lot of players in this draft.
Yeah, I feel like people are getting tired of the Ignite in a lot of ways. So okay, if he came around like 2-3 years ago, I feel like people would be a little bit more into some of the upside that he has. But because he is still raw and he is, you know, does have some things to work on in terms of playing against physicality and all that stuff, I feel like it's maybe not as intriguing to a lot of people. And also,
yeah, you're right. He doesn't have the buzz. That is probably the G League Ignite thing, right?
Yeah, that, and like people just don't watch Ignite games like that. People much more commonly are going to watch even like a Big Ten game on a Saturday than they are going to tune into ESPN Plus on a random Wednesday where it's the Ignite versus the Windy City Bulls or whoever it is. Like, nobody really cares about that. There's 40 people in the stands. That's a whole nother thing about the Ignite program as just a whole. Like, not, and just a quick tangent, I want to hear your thoughts on this. For like development purposes, being in an environment where there is no like stakes, really, like at the end of the day, the Ignite people are focused on their development and them at the end of the day. Like, it's kind of a selfish by nature program because you are looking out for yourself at the end of the day. You want to perform as well as you can.
It's so
true. And that plus like there not being people in there, there's no environment to play in. College, for all the things that it does wrong and, you know, bad spacing and the way that the Big Ten can play at times with like a Zach Edey in the paint, you know, all that kind of stuff, they're going to bring the environment. Those are some of the best basketball environments in the country, you know, 100%. Even rivaling the NBA. So I feel like that's a big difference. What do you feel about?
Oh, 100%. I mean, first of all, let's just talk about within the G League. Like, they have no chance of winning a G League title, so they're not playing for the team. And the G League in itself, it doesn't have that type of following. Like, when you see passionate fans around you, you're almost playing for them as well. So for all of those reasons, plus they're younger. Yeah, man, you're right. Like, the team aspect kind of gets thrown out the window unless the coaching staff does a phenomenal job of like keeping them in the matrix somehow and making them believe that they should play as a team for some reason, because there's no reason why they should if you like look at the environment.
Yeah, I feel like they do a decent job of that just based off of things that I've heard and just kind of the
it has to be a priority, right? I'm sure it has to be a priority for them. Yeah,
the thing is, like, this year, and this is the biggest issue with it, is they have so many prospects this year, young guys, and they're expected to go out there and win and perform and win games. Like, when your best player on any given night is probably John Jenkins, like, he's the only vet that you could really count on for most of this season. Who, John Jenkins, I think, is a borderline NBA player. I think he could be on an NBA roster. But it's so hard as a program to build something where you're asking a lot of vets to kind of come give up like years of their playing ability for, you know, less salary or wherever they can make in Europe to kind of help this program.
It's a player.
You know what I'm saying?
It's a player coach role. You have to be on that transition. Yeah.
Exactly. So, like, you kind of put yourself in this weird spot where if you can't win games, you're kind of wasting years of your career, especially for a lot of these guys who don't have like too much time left. So I don't know. I've been kind of thinking about all these different things about the Ignite. So, but yeah, like for Matis specifically, like, he's got a lot of upside in a lot of different areas, but, it's just kind of, there's just been kind of pieces right now.
Do you think it'd just be better to spread those G League Ignite players out throughout the G League?
I've heard that idea.
I never heard that idea. It just came to my mind now. Yeah.
Well, that's a good one. I, you yeah. know, People have talked about that. I think that for them, it would just have to be like, you'd have to control the, like, create another Ignite program, but the vets got to be in place, got to create some sort of structure around the players and their skill sets for them to be able to grow and develop. And that's such a difficult thing because 1 year you have Jalen Green, next year you have, Dyson Daniels and Jaden Hardy, and the next year you have
Scoot's been there, right?
Scoot Henderson, and now you have Ron Holland and Modest Buzet. Like, those are all completely different players who need different things to kind of succeed or at least develop in a lot of different ways. And it also get the reps to explore and kind of figure out who they can be. So, it's just a lot of, I don't know what the solution is necessarily, but the one thing I do know is they can't bring on eight players that are trying to get drafted at a time at 18, 19 years old.
Yeah, and the NIL kind of takes away the allure of getting paid by the G League Ignite. Let's stay in college, actually, or shift away from the G League to college. Reed Sheppard, what do you feel about people giving him top five consideration? Had a really big game lately. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think I'm at the point where I'm with it in this class because even with some of those concerns in him as a creator or being able to take on some of the lead guard responsibilities and also being 6'3 with like a 6'2, 6'3 wingspan, those aren't necessarily the traits where that you're looking for from a top five prospect, especially at the guard position. But when you look at what he does on any given night, like, he's affecting the game in all facets. It's not always scoring. Sometimes it is, just getting those big deflections and coming up with the steals in the ways that he does, just making plays off ball defensively, or it is knocking down shots, shooting over 50% from three on this volume over the course of the season. Just the way that he's able to impact the game in so many different facets, that's what's put him into this conversation for me. And I think when you look at some of those advanced numbers like BPM, which, you can say what you want about some of the catch-all numbers, but when you look at the history of freshman guards who have been able to put up BPM that rival his, they're all successful in the NBA, like all of them. So it's like Tyrese Halliburton, it's Trae Young, it's all those guys, Lonzo Ball. So I think when you put all those pieces together, he makes a compelling case for a team like a San Antonio if they were to get for him to be a real option for them.
Who does he remind you of?
I don't know yet. I've been trying to figure that out, but I don't have like a clear cut, comparison for him because I do think he is capable of a little more as a creator. Like, you see some of the skip dribbles he's able to do, and when he is able to, he gets that point guard usage. And is able to get to the basket or, pull up off of them going under a screen and do those things. I think he's got a little bit more there, so it's hard to compare him, what he's done at Kentucky and the role that he's in, to somebody. But yeah, I haven't been able to pinpoint one that makes a ton of sense yet.
Grayson Allen, feel free to disagree. I'm just throwing names out there.
I think he's too good at other things. Grayson Allen wise, if you got some more, we'll keep going.
I don't know. Like, so who's the closest, like, that you think, like, just working, working through your mind right now, you're thinking of all these. Is there somebody even, like, remotely close? And is
Yeah,
that, and if that, and if you can't think one, is that almost like a problem?
not necessarily. Sometimes it can be, but for me personally, like, I don't really think about comparisons a lot until like the end of the year. I mean, some of them when they you like immediately see him and it's like, okay, that dude looks just like, so and so. That kind of you think of that instantly, but I haven't felt or heard any for him that I like really like so far. I'm trying to look at and see if anybody has come up with one that I like, but I can't think of one.
So let's shift this. Who does Rob Dillingham remind you of? Because I hear like a lot of different names.
There's a lot of names I think you can go with Rob, like, because there's a lot of different outcomes for a player like him, because he could be kind of a Lou Williams microwave scorer type, which was a really good player in the league. Or he could be somewhere from the range of Emmanuel quickly to, more dynamic.
He's almost starting to show some more playmaking, though, right? To like live outside of those comps a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's a solid playmaker. I felt like Lou Williams was solid towards the end of his career, even too, especially like that one Clippers year. He almost made the All-Star team.
Yeah, right.
But he's not necessarily the guy where you start getting him in like the Trae Young conversations or you know, things like that. So I don't know. There's a lot of directions that you could probably, you know, Brandon Jennings is one. I know a lot of people. You can see that kind of mechanically just in the ways that they move. I feel like he's a little bit more talented as a just shot maker in general. Brandon Jennings probably had an edge as a passer. You know, Darius Garland as like a high end outcome, you know. Yeah. So there's a few there.
Has he surprised you this season? Like, has he kind of your expectations? Did he surpass that?
Yeah, definitely. When I came into the season, just based off of OTE last year, you know, you see a talented guy. If you're watching the highlights, you might have been a bigger fan of him. But, you know, it was just a lot of bad shots, a lot of bad turnovers. The decision-making was off. And I guess kind of that goes to just the structure of what OTE has been in the last couple of years. But, you know, you could see it. I just wanted to see it, especially at this Kentucky level, how he would be able to produce, especially with some other guys like DJ Wagner there and other guards in front of him that he would have had to kind of beat out for minutes. But as he got into, even when they were doing scrimmages, he went for like 40. I was like, okay, you know, and then he ended up being like top 40 on my board coming into the year. But he surpassed all that. The way that he's transitioned and been able to be more of a part of the team as a whole and be able to knock down, catch and shoot threes, kind of rein in some of that decision making and, you know, be a better decision maker and pick and rolls and all those, take care of the ball better. That type of stuff is what's gotten him into the lottery conversation. So he's definitely surpassed everything that I thought he was going to be this year. So it's been good to see.
Let's finish with the rookie of the year race. You know me, Keandre, I was really high on Chet. Does he have any chance at this point, any chance to win rookie of the year?
Sadly, I think the answer is no. And that's crazy because he's been really, really good. Like, there's so many other years Chet would be like, we'd be like, all right, it's Chet. You know what? Yeah. We're going home. We don't need to talk about anybody else.
Right.
And especially like if for some reason Wimby didn't exist this year, it would be Chet, everybody else. As good as Brandon Miller has been, as good as we've seen Jaime Jaquez have stretches, like it would be Chet by a wide margin. So I guess, you know, that's just a testament to what Wimby has done over the last couple months. But yeah, I think it's at this point, it's pretty much Wimby.
Yeah, I agree with you. I guess let's finish something a little more interesting. So if those two were not rookies, who do you got, Jaime or Brandon Miller?
I've got Brandon Miller. I feel like Jaime has had some better games, you know, as of late, but what Brandon Miller has done, you know, for the better part of the season, obviously he got a little bit more hot there a couple months ago, for a few weeks ago, but just the shot making that he's shown and, you know, provided for them, especially as being as high on the scouting report as he has on a nightly basis for a team that hasn't had LaMelo for a lot of the time that he's played and has just got Miles Bridges kind of back there, you know, doing what he's doing. And then they've had other injuries. They traded, you know, Grant Williams and you know, got Trey Mann and all that. So I've liked a lot of what he's done. So he'd definitely be the guy.
Things come full circle. I remember going into Brandon Miller's year, we were talking about guys that are going to jump up the draft board. And Brandon Miller, he was like in like the late teens and 20s of a lot of mocks going into that college season.
He was. Yeah. That was an interesting time.
That was.
Especially because I feel like a lot of people held on to that for a while when, you know, even I was a little bit skeptical because he did have to kind of get better at certain things over the course of the year, which he ended up doing. But at that point, he became like a obvious, you know, top five guy. And especially like looking back on it, Charlotte, I feel like Scoot could have, like they could have made that work with LaMelo and Scoot if it might have taken a little bit longer because we've obviously seen some of the things Scoot has struggled with. But from just a basketball fit perspective, it's Brandon Miller. Like that works. That makes more sense. And, you know, obviously we're seeing, as they get LaMelo healthy, they got something at least working there. And that's all you want to see for a team that's been where Charlotte has.
Yeah, I have to ask you. I wasn't going to ask you this, but you mentioned Scoot. Are you concerned at all?
I'm not super concerned, honestly. Okay. I'm actually a little bit more concerned, like injury wise, because he has had injuries even dating back to his first year with the Ignite. And I feel like we didn't talk about that because everybody was focused on Wemby's injuries when he actually hadn't gotten injured that many times. When Scoot was right there in front of us, he'd been injured several times in a lot of different ways.
Right.
But that's a whole nother point. But like from a basketball perspective, I feel like it's gonna take some time just for him to kind of figure out what he's able to do and what he needs to work on. But the good thing about him is just like the playmaking has always been there. Like from the first game that he played in, like he still makes those reads where you're like, that's something there. He's just going to have to figure out how to shoot, what shots to take. And then, you know, obviously guard defense for all guys, even the best defenders, kind of takes a little bit. So that's kind of, I'm not super concerned, but it's going to, over the next year, we're going to have to, he's going to have to start hitting certain benchmarks.
All right. One last thing. I promise, Keandre. 2024 draft sleeper. Yeah. Draft sleeper. You don't even have to tell me why. Just give me the name.
2024 draft sleeper. Well, obviously, that's kind of a big question, but
I only ask the big questions, Keandre. You know that.
Yeah. So I would probably go with right now, I go with Keyshawn George out of Miami. Okay. Now there's still the potential that he doesn't declare this year, but you've got a guy who's 6'8". He's shooting the ball as good as almost anybody in the country at that size. He's able to dribble, he's passed. He's kind of a little bit slow. He's not a plus athlete, but
he's
able to get to 6'8".
Oh, okay.
He's able to get to certain spots on the floor. He's a freshman, but he's a little bit older. Able to get to certain spots on the floor, you know, run pick and rolls, been really solid defensively and gotten better there over the course of the year. So I think when you just look at all the tools and the things that he's able to do on a nightly basis, and you look at the rest of this class, he's somebody I think could rise into, you know, late lottery top 20 conversations and, you know, be sort of a swing pick or a wild card in this class. So he'd definitely be a sleeper for me right now. And then, that'd probably be my best pick.
Keandre, you're always welcome on the show. Let everyone know where they could find you on social media and, of course, on YouTube.
Yeah, so you can find me on socials, you know, just type in Hoop Intellect. I'm on YouTube, Hoop Intellect. Got, you know, big boards, a lot of the scouting reports coming up really soon as we get into March. So, just be on the lookout for all that stuff. This is the best time of the year for me and the channel. So, yeah.
Most definitely. Keandre, you're always welcome back on the show. Talk soon.
Appreciate it, man.
There it was. Another episode of Combos Court is in the books. Shouts to Keandre. Shouts to our sponsor, Prize Picks. Shouts to everyone who tunes into Combos Court across the globe. For a first deposit match up to $100 on Prize Picks, use code COMBO. That's right. Use code COMBO for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy. And be on the lookout for the next episode of Combos Court. Combo out.